Hello and welcome to Voices, a podcast about people. My name is David Bowman and I'm your host. In this episode, episode 3, I sit down with friend and fellow marketer Rod Summer. Hi, this is David Bowman. I am joined by Rod Summer, partner with LJB, an architectural engineering and consulting firm headquartered in Dayton, Ohio. Rod serves here as marketing director, corporate sales manager, and chair of the curriculum committee for LJB University. Welcome, Rod.
Thank you, David. My pleasure to be here.
Let's start with some questions right away. LJB has a very unique approach to sales. Can you talk a little bit about how you utilize your people to drive sales here at LJB, some of the challenges inherent with that model, and why this has been successful for you?
Well, David, we subscribe to a theory, I guess you could call it. It's attraction-based marketing. What attraction-based marketing would say is that while new technologies and techniques on the marketing front are constantly being developed, the sales model for professional services, be it engineering, architecture, accounting, law, the sales model for professional services hasn't changed in 200 years. It's still two people developing a relationship based upon mutual trust and respect. And that is how we view sales here in our industry. So we do not employ any salespeople here at LJB. We actually train our technical professionals, our engineers, and our architects how to sell, and they've been very, very successful with that.
Well, that's an interesting approach to sales, no salespeople.
We do not, yes. We just got rid of the salespeople. Actually, we refer to it as cutting out the middleman, because we also define sales as problem solving. And, you know, there's not an engineer alive who went to engineering school to become a salesperson. So they don't, some don't take to it too well when you say that they're going to have to go into sales. But once we refer to it as problem solving, they become much more comfortable, because that is what they're trained to do, and that is solve our clients' problems. And sales is problem solving.
Absolutely. There's traditionally in any business, there's an inherent tension between sales and marketing. Obviously, there's a lot of a tension that can exist between sales and engineering or production. So I imagine that creates a very unique challenge here when your salespeople are by trade engineers. So talk about that dynamic between sales and marketing, how you get them to play nice with each other and to work towards shared goals.
Well, it's a great question. I'd be happy to talk about that. We have intent statements. The marketing director's intent, or the intent of our marketing program, is to drive person-to-person contact with qualified prospects. So everything we do from a marketing perspective is designed to drive person-to-person contact with qualified prospects, which very much mirrors the attraction-based marketing philosophy of, I need to get my engineers, my problem solvers, face-to-face with clients who have problems. So the marketing department's job is to do that, is to facilitate that. Once we're into then the sales mode, there has to be that synergy, and we strive on the sales front to qualify not only our clients, our prospects, and our projects, but truly try to pursue a 50% hit rate for any opportunity that we would choose to pursue. So we focus very, very carefully on what we do pursue and what we don't pursue.
And how, talk about some of that decision-making process in terms of, from a marketing perspective, how do you decide what you're going to do, which tactics you're going to employ?
Great question. We're organized here at LJB into a series of 7 client-focused business teams, or vertical markets for the marketers in the audience. Vertical markets, it would be, say, industrial, institutional, commercial, transportation, federal. Each business team has a leader, a business team leader, which is truly a regional sales manager, if you will, who is responsible for the strategy and the execution of their program, their sales program. Those teams are made up not only of the business team leader, but then representatives of each of the key services that we are delivering to those clients. Those key services could include architecture, structural engineering, environmental sciences, environmental engineering, electrical engineering, etc., safety consulting. So we bundle up those key services into the various vertical markets or business teams. Each business team develops their own strategies, their own goals. They go in to develop a series of what we call SMART goals, and that is an acronym, S-M-A-R-T. Yes, S-M-A-R-T. I wanted to put an E on the end of that, but for those who haven't heard of the SMART goal philosophy, S stands for specific, the M is measurable, the A is attainable, the R is relevant, and then the T is trackable. So we develop a series of anywhere from 6 to 8 SMART sales goals for each business team, and then we execute against those.
How often are those goals assessed, reassessed, changed? What's the shelf life? I guess that probably varies based on the goal. But
yeah, it absolutely varies. We have short, medium, and long-term SMART goals. Some may be finished in a month. Some may be 6 to 8 months. We have one SMART goal that has a lifespan of about 5 years. So we revisit our palette of SMART goals pretty much on a quarterly basis.
Okay. Talk about how technology has changed your approach to marketing.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier, I know, in our past lunches, David, about technology and marketing. And, you know, I said at the outset, relative to attraction-based marketing, technology and techniques change constantly. When I started in this industry, the internet didn't exist. You know, we didn't have websites. They didn't exist. It was a brochure, collateral-driven business. I've never been one to dive into and be an early adopter of technology. I'm very supportive of technology. We have initiatives underway to use video on demand training tools and podcasting. And obviously our website is a key marketing and sales tool for the firm. But I try not to let technology get in the way of our sales philosophy. And that is, again, it's a relationship business. It's a person-to-person business. It's not two businesses doing business with each other. It's two people doing business with each other. And oftentimes technology can get in the way of two people establishing a good, solid trust relationship.
How does LJB go about attracting new customers as well as keeping your current customers happy? And let me frame that up in the context of you operate in the world of business-to-business services.
Correct.
Which is particularly challenging relative to new customer attraction. So if you could talk a little bit about your approach to attracting new customers and then keeping them.
Sure. As I mentioned, we develop programs within each of our client-focused business teams. And one of the key tools that we leverage is public relations. In a service-to-service or service business, public relations is the key. We spend a significant amount of time and energy getting our professionals on the agenda to speak, speaking opportunities at national and regional trade shows and conferences. We are just launching a speakers bureau throughout the firm where the outside world could access our professionals to speak at whether it be the Rotary Lions or Kiwanis Club or a university career fair, a senior design class. So we try to get our professionals out and about in not only in the local community, but within their professional circles, both to attract new prospects and clients, but also to attract potential recruits to our business. To that end, many people are not naturally blessed with public speaking skills, so we do establish many presentation training and sales training programs through LJB University. You mentioned at the outset that I chair the curriculum committee for LJB University. And a big piece of that internally is sales training, if you will, or public relations and presentation training. So we invest in that, but we never ask any of our professionals to do something that they're not comfortable with, that we're not willing to provide the necessary training for.
Outstanding. Let's talk a little bit about inspiration. And I know you've had a tremendously successful career to date. I'm sure nowhere to go but up for you as it continues onward. But talk about who's inspired you and potentially who inspires you currently. people you've come in contact directly with throughout your career?
You know, I think I'll answer a different question.
All right, okay, David.
I don't think it's any one person, honestly. I had the opportunity to go through the Leadership Dayton program back in 1993, 15 years ago. And a great opportunity. It was a class. If you haven't been through that, that's a program through the Dayton Area Chamber of Commerce. And you're in a class with anywhere from 30 to 40 to 45 up-and-coming community leaders. And a great group of people in my class in 1993 had the opportunity to serve on the Board of Governors in 94, 95, 96. And there are some fantastic people in this community. And I would say it's no longer going to be just one person or two or three people who are going to lead this community, the Dayton region. I think it's truly going to have to be a team group effort. And my understanding now is there's pushing 1,000 graduates of the Leadership Dayton program. Dayton has one of the oldest Leadership Dayton programs in the United States, and we have to find a way to better leverage that core group who are choosing to stay and live and work here in the Dayton region.
And one of the other groups you're involved with here locally in Dayton, I know, is public broadcasting. Channels 14 and 16 here locally. You've been heavily involved with, spent some time there as an employee. And I wanted to talk a little bit about public broadcasting in general. And what do you think is the importance of public broadcasting? Why should people choose to support that?
Yeah, actually, my first community involvement, my first leadership position in the community was on the Greater Dayton Public Television Board of Trustees back in 1993-94. When I got out of Leadership Dayton. And I guess I would say through my volunteer time there, I was on their staff for a short period of time, and I continue to volunteer, emceeing the Great TV Auction every year. But, you know, public television, not to be trite, but it is free to the public, and it is the only source of quality programming day in and day out that is still free to the public. You don't have to have the satellite dish. You don't have to have the cable coming into the house. You can flip on the TV with an antenna and access very quality programming. And many of the genres out there today, whether it be the History Channel or other science channels, almost every one of them was born through public television. And what a lot of people don't know about public television is whether it's stations like Think TV 14 or Think TV 16 or public radio locally, they have to purchase their programming. There is no free programming for public broadcasting. Those stations have to buy it, spend a lot of money for it, and that money comes, the lion's share of that comes from donations from people like you and me, David, or corporations that choose to underwrite their local public television stations. So there's a soft spot in my heart for it. I've been involved with Think TV now since 1993-94, and hope to continue that relationship for years to come.
As a huge fan of Channel 14 and 16, and someone who, one of the few people who still has the rabbit ears hooked up to the top of the television.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Maybe because I'm frugal, as they say, or cheap, as others would say. But I can't stress enough how highly I think of public broadcasting, and wanted to give you the ability to make a shameless plug for the upcoming Think TV auction, if you so choose to do so.
Well, David, I do choose to do so. Thank you so much for asking. The 2008 version of the Great TV Auction is coming up on April 7 through April 12. That would be Monday evening, the 7th, and it will wrap up the evening of Saturday, April the 12th. And strongly encourage everyone to tune in. It comes on every night right around 6 p.m. I believe it's 6 to 11 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 4 to midnight-ish on Saturday the 12th. And the key to being a winning bidder is to simply bid high and bid fast. That is the key to being a
winning
bidder.
That is the key.
Yes.
Bid high, bid fast. You're a very busy guy. I know you're involved in boards. You got three jobs here, at least. And always on the go. And I wanted to know, as someone myself who has wasted countless hours exploring ways to be more productive, ironically, what your system is, what types of tips you have for staying organized and being a productive human being.
Well, I always strive to be more productive. Actually, I have two technologies or two techniques that I would use and have used for years. One is clearly leveraging our technology in-house here at LJB. We're a Lotus Notes platform for email and calendaring, and I heavily leverage that through my BlackBerry. I found I can be very efficient if you don't get obsessed with the BlackBerry. But probably the most important tool that I use is it's a Word document, David. I call it my to-do list, cleverly. And right now it runs about 30 pages long, single-spaced. But not everything in that to-do list is equally important, and they're obviously not all priorities. For years and years, I've always just, if I have a thought in my brain, I write it down on my to-do list into this document and go through that list every 3 to 4 days, resorting out the priorities, moving all the A priorities to the front page, and that's what I work off of. If it's not on the front page of my to-do list, it doesn't get done, but I do revisit that, and I have dug up thoughts that have been in my to-do list for 5, 7, 10 years. At the time, they weren't relevant, but today they are, and I'm glad that I had that thought down. And I've always found, too, that if you write down notes, take a lot of notes, write things down, you don't have to remember it anymore. You can free up your mind to, like I like to say, be in the moment when you're dealing with people and communicating and developing relationships.
Well, knowing that I made it to the front page of a 30-page to-do list so that I could have you here.
David, you were on the top third of the front page. How about that?
That's fantastic. Talk about, real quick, this is something, it may border on minutia, but it's really interesting to me, is the way that people deal with email. I have seen theories where people will go as far as to only check it once a week because it can be such a, not only a time waster, but sort of serves organizational ADD where you're perpetually pulled in and away from what you deem as priorities into the dinging email that all of a sudden has your attention. What's your approach to email? Do you sort of answer as they come in or sort of batch that where you can?
It's difficult to batch. Some email clearly could sit for a week. It's more of an FYI. Other email does require immediate response. And I think with the BlackBerry tool or just the laptop or the PC on your desk, probably my philosophy is I glance. I'm a glancer. I will look, and if I sense that it's something that needs my immediate response, I'll try to respond within the hour. If something can wait until end of day, I do try to clean my email, at least the inbox, at the end of every day. I don't let things carry through longer than that, especially with the BlackBerry. When people know that you're connected 24/7 to the BlackBerry, it's amazing what the expectations are of response time.
Outstanding. A little bit off topic, shift gears a little bit. What are you going to listen to on the way home tonight?
When I go home tonight, let me see, tonight is Monday the 24th of May. My Dayton Flyers play tonight.
Our Dayton Flyers.
Our Dayton Flyers. You're one of us, David. I'm sure by the time I get home tonight or be driving home, the pregame show for their big NIT game against Southern Illinois will be on the air. So I'll be listening to Larry and Bucky in the pregame show.
Great radio.
On any other night, what I would probably be doing, to ask that question, I'd put on my headset because I'm a hands-free, safe driver. With my cell phone, and I would be probably catching up with family and friends. I find my 15 to 20 minute drive home every night is a great time to catch up with family and friends.
What's the best book you read lately?
Great book I just finished was Marshall Goldsmith's newest book titled What Got You Here Won't Get You There, and it's all about how successful people can become even more successful. And Marshall recently came to Dayton to speak as part of the University of Dayton's Center for Leadership and Executive Development, had the privilege of sitting through his day-long workshop on that very subject, several hundred people there at the National Composite Center, and we all secured a copy of his latest book as part of that program. and just finished reading it and just finished actually doing a book review for my partners this morning, as a matter of fact, on that book. Great teachings, great learnings, and I think my takeaway from that and from Marshall's presentation is we never stop learning. No matter how successful anyone is, we've all developed bad habits throughout our career, and many of us think that those bad habits actually make us better, where in reality they're habits that need to be fixed. And nobody's immune to that. Marshall Goldsmith works with Fortune 500 CEOs and CEO wannabes, and you try telling a guy who makes $50 million a year, and he's a Harvard grad, that he has issues, and get paid to do that. You know, he's pretty amazing. So,
finally, you mentioned University of Dayton a couple times, not just in the soundtrack for your commute, but the impact it's had on your life. As a matter of fact, you and I came to know each other
yes.
as a result of the University of Dayton. And I wanted just to talk about what UD has meant to you, not only your experience while you were there, but since you have graduated, and the importance UD has to the community here as well as just the world at large.
Yeah, I just can't say enough about the University of Dayton. I'm a 1983 graduate of UD, so this year actually my 25th college reunion, which kind of makes you feel old. It does make you feel old, not
yeah.
kinda, yes. UD, I'm not sure if they still use the slogan of, you know, lead, learn, and serve, or a variation thereof, but those would be the three takeaways that I had from my time at UD. I mean, they will truly emphasize the importance of leadership and service, not only in your community, but within your family circle, no matter what region you live in, but also clearly the learning aspect, which you would think of from a university. Well-rounded education. I was a communications broadcasting major. Who would have thought that I'd end up being a partner in an engineering architectural consulting firm? But I think the UD education really helps prepare their graduates and their students to be nimble with their career, and I think that's very, very important moving forward. UD as an anchor in the community, I mean, just look at the physical plant. Look at the number of people who work there, the new 50-acre purchase from NCR and what that can mean for the southern downtown region, the Genesis Project in collaboration with Miami Valley Hospital and what that has meant for that area, which is adjacent to South Park. I mean, UD is just a fabulous institution, and the Dayton region is very fortunate to have not just the University of Dayton, but a whole family of just great universities and colleges in this area, everywhere from Wright State to Central State, on down over to Antioch, of course, having their issues. But and then I'm even going to say down the road, let's go to Cincinnati. David, you're familiar. You got to say Xavier. Xavier is a fine university as well.
Absolutely. There you go. Well, Rod, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I really appreciate it. And look forward to getting together with you again soon.
Well, very good, David. Thank you for asking me. This has been a lot of fun, and you do some great things. You do some great things for the community and for our profession. And as a fellow professional, peer professional, I just want to formally say thank you for doing that and doing things like this. It's been a lot of fun, and hope to do it again sometime.
Thanks.